No, because I do an intro.
Like a dog click and be like, this is where we actually, this is where the intro goes.
And that just became the new intro.
Insert intro here.
Yes.
Well, because then it would be like aggressive. It would have like a big old spike on the audio. You'd be like, that's where the dog clicker was.
Yeah.
That's where she clapped aggressively. That's where she was like, nailed it.
Love it. It's like the podcast version of Fat Amy from Pitch Perfect. Like, crushed it, you know, like,
yeah, dog crushed
click,
it.
Nailed it. Yeah.
Nailed it.
Go. I like it. Okay. Well, welcome, folks, to Malkier Talks, Willard's own fairy podcast, with the unusual intro of the dog clicker. As you notice, there's a few of us this week, and we're starting a bit on, what's the word I'm going for here? Different than usual, because I normally just go straight into the intro. That's not the word I'm going for. I just can't.
That was a lot of words. That wasn't a word.
No, in a non-traditional fashion. There we go. So I'm joined doing the episodes, as always, by Kayla. Maverick on the beanbag, making a lot of noise. Thank you, Mavi. And we've also roped in Katie. Say hello, Katie.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thanks.
Maverick. Mav's having a lot of fun on that beanbag now.
Shut up, Maverick. You're stealing my thunder.
Maybe we should start over.
No, I like this. This is great. This is brilliant. Ladies and gents, this is exactly how the podcast is going to be.
This is exactly what real life is.
Yes, this is, yes. When Katie and Kayla get going, it's just a giggle fest. It's brilliant. So, Katie, tell the folks a little bit about yourself, as much as you're willing to share.
You didn't have me introduce myself the first time I got on.
Well, then, all right, I don't want to introduce myself either.
Okay, fine. You're Kayla. She's Katie. Done. Intro.
We're cousins.
Yeah, they're cousins.
Like in real life.
They're two tripping peas out of a fire out pod. This is going to be hilarious, though.
We have the same initials.
You do have the same initials, yes.
I thought for a second you were going to say we have the same grandparents. And I was like, that's what a cousin is. I think they probably could have like guessed that one.
I don't know. You live in Tennessee. Cousins means something different there.
Cousins means your spouse here.
Exactly.
Is that why we've got her on the podcast now? Because you missed her that much? Like, you know,
she's my favorite.
Your favorite cousin.
Joe, she's just my favorite.
Everything.
Period.
Okay, yeah. Nice.
Yeah, so we have the same initials and we are bibliophiles to the extreme.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell them about the reading. I don't know what you call it. The Excel file. The monster of an Excel file or document that you two have created.
Katie created it.
Katie, tell us about this monster of a file about recording the detail of the books you're reading.
The book tracker.
There we go.
In addition to loving books, we love Excel spreadsheets
and data.
Statistics that benefits no one other than us. So we have created a book tracker that tracks statistics of how much you read per month and your diversity in your books and your, you know, daily pages statistics, because I like that.
It's good.
It also has information on the authors.
Yes.
And if there's LGBTQIA representation.
And whether or not there's vampires or werewolves.
Or fae. We're both really big fans of the fae. So I think this is just going to prove what we already know. But hey.
It's good to track it. It's good to have a solid number of all the books I read. 90% of them had werewolves in them.
Have you looked at mine? Because we have access to each other's. Have you looked at mine?
I haven't looked at yours.
Oh,
is it all werewolves?
Embarrassing.
Do you care to share an embarrassing fact?
As of the 28th of January, I've read like 30 books. And I would say 26 of them are either fae or I really like angels and demons. There's a lot of that too.
And yet when I spoke to you the other day, I get it's a TV show and not a book, but when I mentioned Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel to you the other day, you were just like, huh?
And I mean,
you knew of them, obviously.
Yeah, but I didn't watch them.
Yeah.
I haven't seen them either.
Thank you.
I mean, yeah, again, it's a TV show, not books, but yeah, Buffy's and vampires and demons and angels and stuff, like, it's in there. Anyway, digressing.
Okay. But here we are. We're going to do this podcast episode about a TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A great TV show.
Books. It's a show we've seen.
It is a show
you've
seen.
That's a step in the right direction.
Yes. Next week, folks, we'll do a show they haven't seen and we'll just bullshit our way through it. So,
I mean, we could talk about Buffy and you've seen it.
Once,
you could be like, what do you feel about Buffy?
When I was a much younger man.
That's more than me.
We could fill it in with Vampire Diary stuff. Because,
oh, God,
like,
that would be hilarious. Katie I've
most recently
that.
Has been watching that, and then I'm doing a rewatch.
And I've not watched it.
And we could just make stuff up. Ugh. And there's a lot of really hot bad guys. And like,
I mean, we've seen Vampire Diaries. We've seen True Blood.
Yep.
So statistically, between the two shows, we could like cobble together probably the plot.
I've seen Twilight.
Right. There you go. So have we.
We could totally wing it for Buffy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in the title. She is a vampire slayer.
Yeah.
There's like probably a witch.
Yeah. Isn't the chick from American Pie?
Yeah. 100%.
She plays a witch.
Ginger witch.
There is.
Mm-hmm. We got that. There's love interest, rival vampire love interest, as all good shows have.
There's a love triangle.
There's a professor guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's just the 90s and 2000 version of the Vampire Diaries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With less hot people.
Yes. And less effects. Obviously, because it's, the 90s. So.
Okay. Cool.
All right. There we go. So
nailed
look forward
it.
To that probably never coming, folks.
Nailed it.
So, yeah. But let's talk about the TV show we have seen. And that's Wheel of Time. Now, Katie, where are you? You're reading the first book. Where are you up to so that Taylor and I know not to spoil you further?
So I'll tell you a fun fact, first of all, is that I have to sleep with a wrist brace because I am reading that book and it has injured me because I'm a fragile person and it is too fat.
Oh, and you're reading a physical book? Not even on your tablet?
No, I'm reading the physical hard copy, like hardcover copy of it.
You went and bought it or you knew someone
who had
it?
We own them all. My dad's read them all.
Oh. And of course, yes, you have told me. Yeah, sorry.
I'm physically too weak to have read this book. So not only am I wearing a wrist brace, but I bought like one of those pillows to set the book on so I don't have to hold it anymore.
Like the one that my parents bought Grandma for Christmas this
100%.
Year?
100%.
The dedication. Listen to that, folks. The
especially
dedication.
Since, honey, I own all of them and they're now on the Amazon joint bookshelf we have.
So I didn't think that through.
Well, in the next one, when the books start getting girthier.
Yes, there's a lot of girth in the later books. So.
I'm going to have to, because this is like, this is only 600 pages.
I mean, she has started book one of 14 and there's 4.4 million words. So, the fact that the book is heavier than her wrist can handle.
Your puny little baby wrist.
It's true. Like, I was sitting there thinking to myself, I was like, why is my, like, carpal tunnel acting up so badly? And then I realized it's because I'm holding the book, like, exclusively one-handed. And
oh,
I can't
well,
no, there's do that.
That's a big rookie mistake there.
Well, I don't want to hold it with two hands, so I'm holding it with one, and it's just too much. It's too much for my fragile body.
That's brilliant. I love that.
So how far along are you?
I have like that much left of it.
Oh,
and
so
keep in mind,
end.
I have also read New Spring. So
oh,
to be fair,
okay.
I have probably already and spoiled myself on some things.
There have been plenty of things that have been a spoiled.
Yes.
Because like as soon as her dad found out that I had finished the book series and I went to visit, we were sitting in her basement and her dad like wheels backwards in his chair because it's hidden behind a wall from where we are doing crafts and is like, what'd you think of the ending? I was like, what? And then we proceed to have a full-on conversation about why we didn't like the end of the book with Katie sitting there. So she knows all that.
Ugh. Well, that was the second time I'd heard that, because before he told you, he told me, as someone who hadn't read it, he was like, let me tell you about how mad I am. I know you haven't read this series, but I have feelings and I have to
talk about
it.
He was mad about
it.
Okay.
He's like, I need to talk about my upset feelings with someone and no one else.
Out of curiosity, has your dad watched the show?
He has.
Yeah,
and
they
what did he think?
Together.
He likes the show a lot. And he likes the series. He just didn't like the end of the book.
Just the, okay, fair. Yeah, okay. I mean,
and so he's,
he's
rereading the books also via audiobook because he's very enthusiastic that I am reading them and he can talk to me about them. So he's going to listen to them. It is very
my God, we should get my dad to do the audiobooks at the same time. And then we should, like, could you imagine the four of us with Rob leading this journey? Like,
I love it.
I would start the recording. And it would have to be video. The four of you on video, I think it would be just a crime to humanity to not record it visually and only do it audibly. But I would just do the introduction and be like, "So, what do you think this week, Katie?" And just let the conversation would just go. And then I, like an hour later, I'd be like, "So, that was this week's episode. Thanks so much for joining us. Goodbye." You know?
The end. Hope you enjoyed.
That no one would understand anything.
It would be amazing.
Especially because I fully don't call anybody by their name. Like, I can't remember their names. So I just call them, like, whatever I feel in my heart.
Nice.
It's right. You know? Like,
What was the one you told me about? Oh, no. It was about Rand and Perrin. That was it, yeah.
Oh, Perrin and Rand and how they should be married.
Their shipping name?
Yeah.
Perrin.
Oh, Perrin. Yeah, that's Perrin.
Yeah, I love
ginger love of my life.
I love the reasoning, because who doesn't want a wolf boy to, like, look after your sheep during the night? You know, it's perfect.
That's literally the best case scenario. Like, your number one concern with sheep is wolves. And if you had a husband who is also a werewolf and could help you with that, you'd be like, "Honey, go watch the sheeps. I'm going to have a nice sleep. See you in the morning."
It's great. I love it. Yeah, it's beautiful. Okay, so we'll actually talk about the TV show now.
Okay. Although
this is a lot of fun. So, so we won't talk about anything. So where, I missed it. Where exactly are you when you said you're near the end? Or what was the last thing you've read?
The last thing was Rand meeting the queen, trying to look at Loghain when he falls off the wall into the queen's garden.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, that was like literally the last part that I read.
Okay, cool. I misunderstood and thought you were further along. So, but that's fine. That's okay. So, all right, TV show time. Okay. We'll get there eventually, folks. What did you think of the cold open with all the fighting in the snow?
Oh, is it me?
Yes.
That's a very intense look.
We are on video, folks, but not for this, obviously.
We're not.
And then I don't know, Katie obviously thought I was talking to Kayla. Kayla, what did you think of the cold open?
Well, I just felt like it was open to anybody, and I just thought you were going to go. I was like, what did you think?
I thought it was amazing. We watched the behind the scenes, and they talked about like how they shot it, and it was really incredible. But I love the Aiel. Bring on the 6-foot-tall plus gingers. Like, I'm all for it, despite Katie's reticence with genders. I love it. She's badass, like flinging around, stabbing the shit out of people, prager as fuck. Like, I couldn't even imagine. I couldn't do that anyways. My knees are far too broken to be like sliding around and stabby stabbing and whatever. But
I don't think I'm in good enough shape to be one of the guys she just whoops ass.
No,
like, let alone be her. So
I love when she like jumps and yanks the guy's cape. Like, we learned that in superhero school. Like, capes are bad news, man.
Yes, no capes.
Yeah, no cape. But it's awesome. It's not believable at all. Like, even though the Aiel are supposed to be like the penultimate warriors,
the Matrix fight moment where she's like whipping him back by his cape. Yes, not believable. But
being in labor and doing that, absolutely. There's no way. Like, they talk about when women give birth, that it's actually so traumatizing that we forget how bad it is, because that's the only way that we could then convince ourselves to do it again.
Oh.
Not that I have any experience with this, but this is what I've heard. So if it is that bad, there's no way. There's no way that you're flipping around, stabbing and killing people, fighting in the snow. But I loved her outfit, too. That was also A+.
What did you think, Katie?
I feel like that would be best case scenario, though. Like, if you're going to be fighting, why wouldn't you be in labor? Because they're not going to hurt you worse than you already hurt.
That's true.
Right? Mm. So, like, you would be full Terminator. Like, if you could fight through being in labor, if someone was just like stabbing you, you wouldn't even care. You would just keep moving. You're like, whatever.
The adrenaline shattered is running my high at that moment.
Yeah.
Shattered my ribs. I don't care. Break my arm. That's cool. Power through it.
Power through a broken arm. Okay, cool.
Yeah, like, yeah, I mean, she gets stabbed and she acts like it's like, that's very painful. And I just don't know that it would be. Like, great, you're already having some problems. So I don't know that that would be any worse or if that would be just more of the same.
Nice. Cool. I think we're all fans of the opening scene, though, judging from those steps.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And her costume.
Yes. It is very, very cool.
Yeah.
So they actually did more crazy stuff I've seen in, like, a previous thing that the actress put on her Instagram. They did crazier stuff, and they actually toned it back because they were like, we want it to be a little crazy, but not, like, oh, I'm Neo's cousin.
Yeah.
Crazy, you know? So...
Well, that makes sense because as someone who hasn't read the books, you have no idea who she is, right?
Or what she is.
If they went too crazy, it would confuse people who hadn't read the books because they'd be like, who is this random, like, matrixing woman doing this? Like, because they would be like, what is happening? What show am I watching? I don't understand it. Anything.
Look, they forgot the sunglasses on the ginger trinity, okay? Come on, you know.
Right, they would be like, I didn't turn this show on, I don't think. I think this is a different show.
Yeah.
With a different badass lady doing
things. I think even with the way they did it, it's if you didn't know, it's like, wait, what? All of a sudden, like, we're in a place where it's snowing, which we haven't seen. We're... clearly different nations that we haven't seen. Like, I could see it easily getting away from people and them not understanding what's happening.
Yeah. And the cold opens are meant to be, you know, a cold open is meant to be something that is not connected specifically to what has just happened on the previous episode or is happening in that episode. Mm-hmm. It's occurring, and it's meant to be kind of like a little standalone piece that's a bit more question raising. But it's, yeah, as you say, it's very easy to take that too far, and, you know.
Well, I think if you weren't paying a ton of attention, I think it would have confused you anyway. Like, even like the full completion of the scene, because the only thing that clues you into what's happening is like someone I know what's happening because I, you know, live with my father. But like, had I not known, like, the only thing that clues you in is Tam seeing him, and you would have to have clocked that it's the same person.
Right.
So, yeah. Like, if you didn't clock, like, if you're just like, that guy looks kind of familiar, you still wouldn't have known what happened, because then they didn't really go back to it. They just like, all right, moving on.
Yeah. They did. It's true. So, moving on.
Okay. He's going to pace us today.
No.
He's wrangling these cats.
Yeah.
Usually there's at least 5 minutes where I wax poetic about Daniel Henney's ass.
Well, we're not at Daniel Henney. We haven't talked about him yet. We get to see Ab-Rock.
He's trying to save time. He's like, we don't want to talk about Tam when there's lands we talked about later. We can
allow for an appropriate amount of time of Daniel Henney worship.
Yes, exactly. Daniel Henney worship. So it moves on. We get, now we're into the whole, like, Matt has been abandoned, or Matt abandoned them at the Ways. And going through all the darkness. Katie, did you expect them to leave Matt behind? Well, like, at the end of episode 6, were you like, where is Matt? Why are you not taking him?
Well, isn't that because they fired the actor? Or he quit? Or he left the show?
No one knows why Barney Harris is no longer working. Well, not no one knows. I'm sure someone knows.
Incredibly well-kept secret.
It is extremely
well-kept. Like, I feel like things get out there all the time. Like, we know these major political scandals are happening all over the globe. We have more detail about that than we do about why Barney Harris is no longer going to play Matt.
I feel like it's a personal reason.
And maybe. I respect that. Yeah. That's totally fine.
And I feel like it was something personal, and then all the cast and crew were just like, well, we're not even going to entertain the question, let alone say anything about it, because we want to respect his privacy, which is, you know, a nice thing, and I'm, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a shame he's going, because he was a good, you know, he's a good Mac Coffin, you know, so. Mm-hmm. But, they did, I don't know if they did that, went back and wrote him going, or whether they were already not having him go, and it just kind of fit because he was going, so, or went. I don't know. There's a lot of goings there, wasn't there?
And quite a few wins. But I'm not really sure where you were going.
You're not sure? No. Well. Nice.
Thank you.
Right. What did you think of that?
I'm not surprised. I wasn't surprised because he was so reluctant all along. And you really could tell that he, in the beginning, didn't want to leave his sisters. And then when all of the baloney happened with the dagger that he picked up and the darkness, and even though Moraine cured him, supposedly, you knew something was up. It felt like it was building and building, and then it just was over so quickly as soon as she found him. It didn't feel surprising that he didn't go. Like, that felt unfinished, so it made sense to me.
Okay.
That he didn't choose to continue down that path with them. I was surprised that they did it in that way. It's more dramatic. I would have figured, like, if for his character, I would have said he would have just slipped out in the night and not been there in the morning when everybody woke up to leave. But this is more dramatic this way.
It is more dramatic. I mean, when Moraine got there and then Loyal turned up, she was like, did you bring people with you?
Yeah.
So, yeah, they could have totally done that. But then you don't get the, reuniting moments and...
Yeah.
You know, Perrin telling Matt he's an idiot for stealing the fucking cursed dagger and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the ways is awesome.
Yeah.
They do such a good job for something that, you know, based off of a book description, like how are you going to create a stage and a set for that and make it feel real and believable and not just like this green screen setup. Like they did a really good job. I really liked it. It felt a little rushed. I feel like in the books it took them longer to get through.
Yeah, they definitely spent a full night.
Yeah.
Quote night, because obviously it's pitch black in there, but a full night in there.
And it didn't really feel like Loyal served much of a purpose. Like,
no.
He was supposed to be the guide. That was kind of the big deal. Was that, you know, the Ogier can guide you. They know the ways. They can read the thingamadoodles.
The guidings.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense that they would call it that.
Yeah.
Well,
thingamadoodles was also too long to fit across the top of the stone.
Robert Jordan doesn't always name things the most logical thing.
Well, no.
So
he also is a fan of naming things with S's.
That is true.
You'll come to learn this, Katie, as you get through the books. There's a lot of S's. So.
And some of them were completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
But it really felt like he wasn't necessary. He didn't serve much of a purpose.
He was the token ginger.
Well, Rand is a ginger.
Oh, well, he was the more obvious token ginger.
His hair is still awful. I still maintain that they did so well with everything except for like his puffball yellow snow hair situation.
The voice sells it for me. I can ignore the hair because the
voice is great.
And the mannerism is just incredible. So but yes, the hair is something. What did you think of the hair, Katie?
I mean, I deal with Rand and he's got some hair too, so it was no worse than I felt about Rand.
Did you notice that throughout the show that Rand's hair seemed to be like its own character sometimes?
Yes.
Like sometimes it was this like tame, real looking hair. And there are other times when you're like, that is so clearly fake and it looks so dry and I hate it and I don't understand what's happening.
And like lit weird and you're like, what is happening with your head, my friend?
Like, did it fall off and he like stepped on it and he just like, nope, put that right back on. Like, There were just times when I just couldn't see anything else happening on the show because I was just so focused on his really bad toupee. That's what I felt like. His really bad red curly ginger toupee. I can't. It's its own character. It needs a name. It needs credits in the end of the show. Like, I can't deal with it.
What would you call it? We need a name for it.
But it has to be like a relatively normal name because it's like a character. It's
okay.
It can't be something way out there. Like,
right.
Like Stew.
What are we going to call it? Like Bob or something, you know?
Stew.
Stew.
Yeah, S-T-U, Stew.
Stew.
Stew the toupee. I don't know.
No, it's stoupee.
Stoupee.
I like it. Yes. It's stoupee.
Yes. Stew. Short for stoupee.
Because it's also stupid. Yes.
And then for it to be ginger, you got to add in like an Esquire Peabody or something to the end of it. Stoupee Peabody.
I like it.
Thank you.
Folks, I knew this was going to be something like this.
Sorry. Anyways, Katie, tell us about the wave.
If you want a legit discussion on episode like 8 specifically, go check out Wheel Takes, because I think they did like a 7-hour deep dive. They're both writers. They recorded their thoughts of episode 8, and it's 7 hours long. It's apparently amazing. People have listened to it and
spent. So you're saying this is not amazing?
Amazing like the insight in that from a writer's perspective and an actor's perspective. This is amazing because you two are freaking hilarious.
I would like to point out that we haven't talked for 7 hours yet, and we haven't gotten to episode 8. So yeah.
Challenge
you don't
accepted.
Know when we get to episode 8, it might be 7 hours worth of like really deep insight.
Mm-hmm.
This is
good Katie point, and yeah. I can be super deep.
Yeah,
we're setting up the stage. You have to like get through this, and then you get like our real mm-hmm. insightful commentary on episode 8.
Well, now you're bigging us up. So okay, cool. I like this. Well, we're still in the ways, and we're like 20 odd minutes in. So we're setting up for 7 hours.
We're moving on.
Yeah,
moving along solidly.
What did you think of the ways, Katie?
I liked the ways. I thought it was good, but I will say I did not like the voices, and I'll tell you why.
Okay,
and this reveals a lot about me as a person. But when they had all the negative things that were talking, and they're very dramatically covering their ears, and they're like, "Oh God, the horrible things that are being said to me," I say stuff like that to myself all the time. So those people are weak. That is weak. If that is your reaction, like if you're fully like grasping your head and you're like, you know, no one loves you and you're not the real one and everyone's going to die because you can't protect them. Weak. Get over yourself. You need to suck it up.
Well, you know, they've not long left their village. They've only been out for what, like 6 weeks now or something, you know, like a month and a bit before that. So, you know, they're still learning the world. They're still children.
Yeah, except but then they're you not should be children in the show. They're supposed to be in their 20s. One of them killed his friggin' wife.
Exactly. He's got trauma.
Yeah.
Maybe
they're
it's...
They're weak. I like that, and I agree.
Maybe it's scary to hear your own voice telling you things like that, like out loud as opposed to...
Just in my own head.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she fully warned you. Like, you were fully warned and prepared mm-hmm. for that moment. She's like, BT Dubs. Ghost voices are going to happen and they're going to tell you some stuff and don't listen. And then they're like, oh no, they're saying mean things.
Okay. So no sympathy for feeling shit. So what do we think of Nynaeve then being like, I'm not going to fucking listen to this shit. I'm going to do something about it.
I support that. I was fine with that. I was like, good job. Way to not listen to the mean voices.
Right? With her giant bubble of self-confidence that she, like, overextends above everyone so that they don't have to listen to the negative self-talk either.
There you go. She's like, I love me and I love all of you.
Yes.
Shut up, mean voices.
She is the strong sister from Encanto.
Yes.
She is Luisa?
Yeah.
There we go.
She was singing them an inspiring song with her
carrying
magic.
Donkeys.
Carrying yes. donkeys, yeah.
Protective donkey bubble against the negative self-talk of the
protective
dark magic.
Donkey bubble. So I love it, because earlier with episode 4, you've got parade bubble from you, and now Katie's bringing us donkey bubble.
Nynaeve is a bubble witch.
She's a bubble witch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
She is all about the bubbles.
Yeah, she does a good job, I think, and it looks cool when she does it, too. Like, I feel like we're starting to see more from her, which is nice. Because, you know, back to Nynaeve being the worst in the books. Now Katie can attest to that.
I will tell you firmly that Egwene is the worst.
She didn't bother me as
full
much
stop.
As Nynaeve does.
In the books or the show?
Both.
Or both?
I was surprised. When I started reading the book, I was like, I actively hate Egwene still.
Okay.
If, like, I like Rand better in the books. Everyone else, I'm like exactly the same. Like, I have no feelings one way or the other. Like, I'm like, I feel like the show, except for Egwene, who I like less, which was hard to do because I already didn't like her. And Rand, who I like more. And I was like, good. I think it's because I don't have to look at him.
You can just forget that he's a ginger. You're not
constantly being reminded he's ginger with stupe.
Yeah, I don't like, I don't have to look at stupe. There's no stew in the books.
That's what it is.
Yeah, I don't have, like, I can just not imagine stupe in my head. He can look however I need him to look to deal with him. And I get very strong Harry Potter in Harry Potter book 5 vibes from Rand in the show, where he's just a little bitch. Like, in the books, he's a much better character, I feel like, than in the show. Because in the show, I'm like, shut up, Rand. Anytime he talks, I'm like, be quiet. You don't get, shh. You little, like, he's acting very teenagery, which would make sense in the books.
Because he's a teenager. Because he is. Right.
So, but he is very, like, I got that vibe in the show more so than the books, that he is very, like, teenagery. Like, he's, like, perfectly fine, and then he'll just go on, like, a absolute tantrum like a child and then be fine again within like 5 second span, and I'm like, homie, chill out, mellow child.
Maybe, you know, carrying the weight of stew makes him more anxious.
Maybe
that's fair. That I would also,
it's hard enough
that.
Being ginger, but now stew's making me a bad looking ginger.
And also, he's supposed to be like super duper tall, and he's just not compared to Marcus Rutherford.
Is that an issue?
Yeah, because Rand is supposed to be a lot taller than Perrin.
Okay.
I'm a height elitist, okay?
It's true. I mean, I also would act like an infant if I had stew on my head and was the same height as the were-boyfriend. Because you have nothing to offer. Like, like you're standing next to Perrin and you're like, I am a trash boy.
I am a sheep herder. That's what I bring to the table. And Perrin is book boyfriend goals.
Quality sheeper. That's about it.
Quality sheeper.
And that's not even like balancing out the cons of like stew. I'm not tall enough.
My girlfriend wants to leave me to go join the White Tower.
Right. Like, he's like, he's got a lot of feelings. He's like, I feel a lot of feelings. Okay.
He does. Yeah.
At this point, he's still convinced that Matt is the dragon. Mm-hmm. He's jealous. We know he's jealous. There's no way he's not jealous. But and then they're in the ways, and so there's, like, the donkey bubble. And then Egwene has her, like, splurt of power to fight off, was it Trollocs?
Yeah, Trollocs, yes. Yeah.
A Trolloc coming out of nowhere.
And so this then is just like, prior to the donkey bubble.
Yeah, and it's like, we finally see some, you know, real looking power from Egwene, right? Mm-hmm. Like, up to that point, we'd seen her little zap
poof of fire.
Yeah, and then she burned the ropes for Perrin, and then maybe started that fire with Perrin. There's a lot of Perrin and Egwene fire happening, and I feel like there's like a subtle like thing happening there. There's some subtle symbolism with the fire.
I mean, there might be
igniting between the two of them. They're passing the flame back.
What do they call it? Pegwane.
Pegwane. Oh, that's a
loaded name. Isn't
I don't
it?
Like that one. I like Perrand.
Perrand. Katie, your face right now is just.
I got a lot of feelings about Pegwane. On like a lot of levels, like the name alone, I'm like, oh. Boy.
Yeah, it's quite a name, isn't it?
But we see her use some real power, right? We mm-hmm. see her blast the shit out of a Trolloc, and it's like, wait, maybe, you know, because Moraine has identified her as having power, and, you know, in order for that to have been a thing, like, we want her to be relatively powerful because she's one of the main characters, but we just haven't seen it, and now all of a sudden she uses it in a way that she defends herself in a really stressful situation with no training. And it was like, okay, cool. Like, I can get behind this. I can get behind her having some, you know, untapped potential at this point that extends beyond whatever she was doing in the Two Rivers before. See, I really liked her in the books, and in the show so far, I've not been a fan. It's like her and Nynaeve have flip-flopped for me. I'm not a fan of Nynaeve in the books at all. And then in the show,
You're on the Zoe train.
Yeah, I feel much better about her. Is she going to be my favorite character? No, never. I can't get over her. She burned me in the books and I can't get over it. Like, I am jilted and it's not going to change. But I feel better. But it's nice to see them giving Egwene an opportunity to, you know, power blast some Trollocs. I like it.
Yeah.
But then it, like, I feel like it really abruptly ends. Like, then yeah, suddenly we're at the exit.
Yeah, they stopped because there's like, oh, I don't know, like the guiding's been destroyed, mm-hmm. so I'll need some time to figure it out. And so they're doing their like, okay, we're chilling out, like maybe some time has passed and we're sleeping, whatever. The Trolloc turns up and it's just like, how far from the Fardar are we? And it's like, oh, it's just, we're almost there. And it's
we can just run.
Suddenly now this Trolloc has appeared, you know the way to go. Right. If you knew before that Trolloc appeared or when
then
that
why were you
appeared,
just hanging out?
Yeah, we are just like, well, you know, I don't want to disturb everyone. Everyone's sleeping, you know. I don't know. Yeah, that definitely felt rushed, that part.
It did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if there had been like a, I don't know, maybe if they'd clearly been sleeping, because Lan was clearly on patrol.
Right.
But it didn't feel like they were sleeping.
No.
It was like it didn't feel like a long period of time later.
No.
So I think there's a small moment in a scene that could have shown, you know, significant time passing or sleep happening or something.
Yeah, yeah. Like them being like, hey, chill out here because we gotta figure this out, or you know, like showing that they've started, okay, well, we figured it out, let's continue down this path. But it didn't do any of that. It was just, yeah, like
you could literally have Lan walking past the group with them all sleeping,
yeah,
and then that wakes them up, or like someone rolls over and it wait, yeah, that could yeah, signify, all right, significant time has passed.
Yeah.
So.
It just felt, like I said, the whole thing felt a much more condensed period of time than it did in the books.
Yeah.
And then suddenly we're out. We're ready to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't love that.
Did it feel rushed to you, Katie?
It reminded me of Lord of the Rings. Like when they're like chilling and then they just go. They're like, I don't care if it's wrong. We gotta go. Like that's kind of what it reminded me of. It's like it didn't feel like they, you're right, like it didn't feel like a night had passed or even like any time. It seems like they had sat down because they're like, we might as well sit down while we think about it, and then immediately something bad happened and they're like, oh, gotta go,
yeah,
we better leave, there's bad guys in
here.
We
know where we're going now,
right? Like, oh, we better just go this way.
Yeah,
our sit down time is over.
Yep. Also, something that's just occurred to me right now, I didn't see any other pathways from the path they were on.
Maybe that's why they weren't confused.
Laura's like, oh, this guiding has crashed. I don't know which way to go. Let me read this. Now it tells me to carry on this single path that we're on. Okay.
We've reached no forks. There is no other place to go. That's true.
There
did not appear to be any other paths at all. Yeah. There was no forks. There was no deviations. There was nothing.
Yeah. I mean, the bridges are described, to be very slim and skinny. And I definitely, when they crossed the bridge to the gate, when they were escaping, they definitely looked very slim as they were getting across. But they didn't make it very obvious as they were walking along that there were other paths or other bridges or anything like that. So, yeah. A rushed.
Yeah.
A few bits missing there. And yeah. Rushed. Yeah.
Could have done it better. Didn't do terrible overall. Yeah.
The visual was very impressive.
Yes.
It felt very cavernous. And scary. Yeah,
yeah.
There's a lot of immenseness there. Yeah, yeah, definitely. I'm making up words now, I feel like.
Immenseness?
Yes.
I'll let it. I like it.
Yeah, you can let that one slide.
Yeah,
it feels good.
We'll go with
okay,
immenseness.
Cool. Okay. So after the immenseness, we're now at Faldara. And we're off to see the Borderlands.
Which is cool because up to this point, we've only really seen
Countryside
and Tar Valon, mm-hmm. which is obviously very different than anywhere else in the books, anywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
So to get to see a totally different kingdom, totally different architecture, I love the costumes. They do such a good job. Mm-hmm. They're so very
Asian
influence. Ah, the shoulder game in Wheel of Time is so strong. Mm-hmm. I love it so much. But it's beautiful. They do a really good job. Wherever that set is, wherever they chose for that location is awesome.
It is an island in the Mediterranean. So it's a Spanish island. Not Cefalonia, that's an Italian island. Like Gran Canaria or something like that sort of thing. It was one of the Canary Islands they went to, I believe. Mm-hmm. And that fortress is, the bottom half of that fortress, as you look at it, is real. The mountains are not real. But the fortress itself is on like an edge like that. And the, like the bottom half of what we see on screen is actually a real fortress.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then they just added more on top. It's an old ancient fortress and they added more on top for the scene.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
They do a really good job of it.
Yeah, it's very impressive. What did you think of it, Katie?
I liked it. It's very pretty.
It is very pretty. Yeah.
Yeah. Really, like I said, really different. And it helps like explain the way that ways work. Like we can tell we've traveled a really far distance because it the landscape and different. Everything is really different.
Yeah.
So it does a good job because otherwise it's like, what was the point of this? What was the point of having them travel in this underground cave? But you can see by the change in scenery that it's a very different part of the world.
Right.
Yeah.
But it what I did think different. Was weird about the rushed and then popping out there was that you almost, from like a person who hadn't read it and doesn't know what's going on, it almost feels like, is that where they meant to end up? Right. So like when they popped out, it was one of those like, is this even where they were going? Or did they just pop out at the next available exit because they were like, we don't know where to go, so we're just going to go out here?
Yeah, well, that is what actually happened. They just went for like, you know, as Lance said, where, how far to this gate? And they just jumped out there instead because they're going to the Eye of the World, which is in the Blights. And Lan knew, well, you know, is the city closer? Because, you know, that shouldn't be the case, but with how the ways work. But in the books, it's mentioned, oh, this gate's nearby. And in the end, they run to it. So I think that's that little nod to the book there. But it's not exactly where they were going.
Right.
As far as I could tell from, I think, you know, Moraine in the show wanted to go to the Eye.
Yeah. So, go directly there. They weren't planning on stopping in Faldara. No. But once they get there, it's like, okay, well, you know, make the best out of a tricky situation. And yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That tracks. Okay, I'm good with that.
Yeah, cool. And then we meet Lord Agomar with the shoulder game. Very impressive shoulder game. And he's a little pompous, in my opinion.
Yeah.
He's a little bit like, oh, you've come to tell me this, and I know better, and you've wasted your time. My sister is panicking over nothing. We're fine. And then she's like, dude, I'm not here to tell you shit. You know, I'm just like stopping by on my journey somewhere else.
Yeah.
I like that moment.
You know? I did too. What was interesting is that his sister was wearing a ring.
Mm.
And I thought you only got the ring when you became like a full sister.
Well, you get, I'm going to give you a little, sorry, spoilers a little bit here. Sorry, Katie, but it's like logistics of how the hierarchy in the tower works. So when you're training, there's three levels, two levels, and then you become a full sister. On the second level, you get the Aes Sedai ring. But you have to wear it on a certain finger. And then when you become a full Aes Sedai, you can wear it on any finger you wish or take it off if you wish.
So here they must just give you the ring, but you don't get the colored stone until you become a full sister.
I think that's how it works.
Because at that point you would have chosen. Okay.
Yeah, I believe that's okay. The case.
I can see that.
Or that's the assumption that's been made. It's because people zoomed in on Amelisa's ring and it doesn't have a stone.
Correct.
So...
Okay.
What did you think of Lord Agomar and that whole meet and greet and sort of thing?
Well, I liked that he was like, we don't need any help, and my sister definitely called you. Because that sounds like the words of someone who probably does need help. Like, that's immediately very defensive. Like, homie, I was not coming for this reason. I'm not here for any reason for you. But thank you. For thinking, like, it seemed just immediately very defensive, like, we don't need help, I'm totally fine, I have it, it's good, we're fine. And it's like, that doesn't sound like you're fine, friend, or you wouldn't have brought it up, because I certainly didn't bring it up.
Yeah, he cuts her off mid-sentence.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, and then she's like, well, if you let me finish, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like she was playing a kind of like a parent tone there, like, come on. You know, or
The way that he stays up on the platform where his throne or whatever is the whole time while he's talking to her, like, he definitely gets an attitude happening, like looking down on her. And yeah, he definitely, and there's the definite brother and sister vibe of like, oh, clearly my sister snitched on me.
Yeah.
She doesn't, it's my kingdom to run. She don't know what she's talking about. Like,
yeah.
Stupid woman sitting in the corner. But yeah. Yeah. But the, again, the costumes, just so cool. Mm-hmm. All of them, all of the stuff that they're all wearing, and it's very different.
Yeah.
And varied amongst all of them. It's really interesting.
And we get to see Uno as well.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. You haven't met Uno yet in the books, but Uno's awesome. So Uno's the guy who's like, where's the eye patch? And he's like, you great bloody bastard, when he sees Lan.
That means nothing to me.
You'll love Uno when you meet Uno.
He's, yeah.
Yeah, Uno's amazing.
You'll like him in the books.
Yeah,
sure. He's pretty good time.
Yeah, he's played by a guy called Guy Roberts. And yeah, he's hilarious. He runs around the Phantom like a lunatic and just like posts everywhere and stuff. And he's a lot of fun. But that's a, keep an eye out for that character. No pun intended there. Because he only has one eye. yeah, because he's a great side character. He's a lot of fun. So especially his interactions with Nynaeve.
Mm-hmm.
I look forward to him and Zoe having a thing. That's going to be brilliant. but yeah. And then we kind of like move on to the whole Min situation then, don't we?
Yeah.
So
I don't like Min.
You don't like Min?
I don't like Min in the books.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't like her in the books.
I can give you a whole like 5,000 word essay on why I think Min is the worst.
Wow. Okay.
Actually, Ro and I have had many discussions on her being like the problematic summation of Robert Jordan female characters, and why he just has picked all of these not great characteristics from everybody else and put them in one person.
Mm.
That
sounds like another recording.
Between Ro and I?
Yeah.
Yeah. We've had that discussion a number of times. But
why don't you like Showmin? That sounds like a name, Showmin.
It does. I just, she has an air about her that she thinks she's really important, and that she's wasting her time with whatever it is she's doing, and, you know, how dare you come and encroach on my territory. And then obviously we see in episode 8 that she fucks off when things get hard.
Yeah.
So she has an attitude, and she's intentionally difficult for no reason. Like, and I get it. Like, she has a power, obviously, Katie. And it doesn't fully explain what that power is. And, but we see that she has some sort of power. She's obviously known of by the White Tower since Moiraine seeks her out.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we know there's some sort of history there.
Yes.
And it could explain why she's so far away from the White Tower in Fal'Dara, but she just has an attitude.
And yeah. She felt very impatient to me.
Yeah.
It was a different take than I expected. It's not one that I hated, but she felt very impatient. And defensive, as you say.
Yeah. You know, like, she had so much better stuff to do with her time. She's freaking tending bar at some random pub in Fal'Dara. No.
After our last meeting of a bartender, what did you think about meeting this bartender, Katie?
I didn't mind her, actually. Because, like, if I was a seer, I would also be annoyed. All the time. So, like, that didn't actually bother me too much. Like, because, like, Moraine just walks in and is like, I need a favor, do the following things. And I'm like, shut up. Can't you see? I'm tending bar, which I like doing better than my witchy magic powers. Like, you just come in here and you demand me look at some teenagers. For what?
Yeah.
Like, so I could see being annoyed, because I don't know that I would not. I think I would probably be annoyed too.
Yeah, now you said that, Moraine did kind of just walk in and be like, yeah, do this, as opposed to, I mean, if someone treated me like that, I'd be like, hi, I'm good. How are you, brother? You know, like, thanks, I'm doing well. So I'm so glad you asked, you know.
Right,
but
like, clearly there's history with her and Moraine, right?
Maybe not her and Moraine specifically. Well, no, she did
seem to know each other, yeah.
Yeah, she did say, yeah, so she's clearly met me.
But that could be even more reason to be annoyed at her.
Yeah,
like, or it, who knows? Maybe Moraine does that all the time. The opposite
side true being that she knows how Moraine is. We all know that she is a stuck-up little bitch.
Maybe.
And she stomps around trying to get her way.
Maybe the history between the two of them is they actually don't like each other.
Maybe.
Because I don't get the vibe they hate each other in the books.
No.
They're not bosom buddies, but they don't hate each other. Bosom buddies. Maybe in the show, that's a Brit thing, by the way. Bosom buddies is just a, you know, your friends.
I know what a bosom buddy is. Oh, right,
okay. The way you said that. Look, after I said Bosch yesterday, and you was like, what the fuck is Bosch?
That's a Brit thing.
Yeah, that's a Brit thing.
Bosom buddies is like a 1920s thing.
Okay. So I can throw out retro ones, you know.
It's not even retro. It's like ancient. Living in a Victorian house.
Hey, we still have those here in the UK, so.
That's fair.
Yeah. So yeah, maybe in the show, they have history, and that's a history where they're like, we don't fucking like each other.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It just didn't... It didn't make me like her, because we don't know her. No. We don't know who she is, her importance. We don't know any of that, and the first interaction is this, and it just isn't a great one. It's not a good first impression.
Mm-hmm. No. It doesn't make you care about her at all.
No.
Right, like,
and you're not stupid headband,
and you're not like intrigued. Like, the whole interaction, like, she's not sympathetic in any way. Like, you're not like, wow, she's really cool, I like her. Her powers aren't interesting enough to really care about them either, because like, you've already seen cooler magic being done, and she just describes them like, you know, I picture sparkles, and you're like, neat, thanks, that's helpful.
And yet you love sparkles. And you know, she pictures sparkles and you're just like, nope, not buying it.
Not interested. Thanks a lot for your no help at all.
Fair enough. I did enjoy the way Moraine cuts her off when she's like, well, the big brooding one. When she's like, they're both big and they both brood.
Mm-hmm. I did like that quite a lot.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because that's like,
despite the fact that was extremely rude of Moraine, it did make me laugh.
Well, because she's trying her hand at being Aes Sedai. She's trying to pull the wool over.
Yeah.
If you will.
Yeah.
And, she, you know, you can't... Moraine's a master at that. You're not going to be able to do that, so why even try? So she's got to put her in her place. Like, she needs to understand that she is not an Aes Sedai. Moraine is. Mm-hmm. You will do what I say.
And you can obviously... One of them is aggressively ginger. So, like... for her to say the big brooding one is like so vague. You could have been like, is it the aggressively ginger one? Because that's the appropriate way to say that. Like, I mean, is it that
aggressive
one?
Is a strong word. You could have just been like the ginger one.
Yeah, right. Like, is it that one? Or is it this redheaded looking fellow?
Yeah.
Especially if he's supposed to be unusual looking and they keep making a point of the way he looks. That is like purposefully obtuse to be like,
Stu does get an unfair amount of attention in a negative light, bless him, poor Stu. so
you would think that would be the first descriptor, right? Like, yeah. I am describing them, I would go for that ginger looking fellow. I see this.
Why is I honest thought you were going to be like that ginger looking motherfucker over there, you know?
You know, I did say it in my heart.
Yeah, there was definitely, she was gonna say that ginger fuck is what she was gonna say.
You can swear on the podcast, Katie, go for it, it's fine.
I fully was, and then I was like, that's not nice, the gingers will send you hate mail, you're gonna get sternly worded letters.
I would also like to point out that Katie has auburn hair and is therefore a ginger,
so I can hate them all I want.
All right, cool.
But I like the way that they show her power. I think they do a good job with that, of like the ghosty, sparkly images that they have. But I think it's more like, based off of how it's described in the book and then how they did it there, it's more on the nose in the show. Like, it's very obvious what's happening. Mm-hmm. Versus in the book, it's like a feather and a spoon and a heroin needle are floating around his head. And like, I don't know what those things mean.
Right.
And in the show, it's like, man holding baby.
She still doesn't know what they mean. But,
right. But
it's more, I feel
concrete. Like, it's a little more obvious when it's like, man holding baby versus like,
yeah,
stiletto heel, nutmeg shaker, and a gnome.
Yeah. And it's clever cinematography, because the images appeared from the position the actors were in that moment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So rather than just being like an image that appears next to them or in front of them or around their heads, It's like that person spiritually stepped forward,
yeah,
and something, you know, they were doing something different whilst the physical person was still, you know, laughing over the fact of like, yeah, they keep making me wear this stupid fucking wig.
I hate so much, everyone's gonna make fun of me. They're all gonna laugh.
Stupe.
Poor Stupe.
That's probably why he's so moody. That's probably not even in the, they're like, probably the director's like, why are you acting like this? Why are you specifically acting in this way? Script is not calling for any of this. And he's like, you're making me wear the stupid toupee. That's why I'm acting too. Like this.
Itchy and uncomfortable. Like I said, it falls off and then he stomps on it and then he's like, fine, I'll put it back on. And that's the scenes where it looks like roadkill.
And that's when he starts getting like real testy. It's because he throws it down. And he's like, I'm not wearing this anymore. And they're like, Randall Thor, you put the back on your head right now. You put it back on your head and you do the scene. We're going to do that take again. And then they do it again, and that's why he's like aggressively bitchy in that scene. Me, 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 me. Put on your toupee, Rand.
Oh, God. Nice. So where do we go next after our impatient, I don't know, we have pissed
off? We have the fight between Rand and Perrin and Egwene. They're all talking about, I've only ever loved one
woman in my life. Yes.
The implication they're paying that he loves Rand.
There is a lot of speculation about this, yeah.
Well, he does say later, I love him too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hey, so Rand. There's that whole fight scene.
Yeah,
what
basically,
even
when
spurs
deciding,
that?
Moraine tells them, like, you know, one of you is the dragon.
The rest of you are going to die.
Yeah, anyone who isn't the dragon that goes to the eye is going to die. We leave tomorrow or something of that nature. Mm. And then, you know, make your choice.
Well, then it's Nynaeve, because then they start arguing and she's like, I'm tired of you fighting over her. Like, she's a prize. And they're like, you've made this so awkward.
Yes.
Yeah, it was completely out of nowhere and unnecessary.
Yeah, it's a weird dynamic in the show.
I also didn't, up to that point, feel like there was anything actually... Like, it's fun to joke about Egwene.
More interaction, more reasoning, or more scenarios in the show, more bonding moments.
Than there is in the books.
Yes, but also between Perrin and Egwene in the show.
Yeah.
They have more moments and more time to bond. It's like even demonstrated where they're like, you know, that moment where they're like, did you like that fire? Or did I? And they're like, oh, it's okay. We'll just, you know, be cozy and be like, you know, like there's more of those sorts of things between those two in the show. And then it's just like, oh, well, you know, I don't know. It still didn't feel that way when they delivered it. Like, you know, stop fighting over her type thing. It didn't feel.
I didn't feel like what I was saying is I didn't feel like that there was a romantic relationship budding there.
That's what I meant. There's more opportunity. And they still didn't feel that way.
Yeah.
So that's what
it
I'm
felt
to say,
like
yeah.
friendship. Yeah, it felt it like did. Really long term, almost sibling, like definitely platonic friendship. Mm-hmm. And that if there was anything going on, I would have thought it was imagined on Rand's part, but then for
Nynaeve
to be
the one
that like calls him out on it, it just felt like she was intentionally causing a problem.
Yeah. I think if Rand had like just had some realization without the Nynaeve line, it would have made a lot more sense for it to be suspected.
Yeah. Right.
Whether it's true or not.
That would have made sense.
It's like it's trying to recall history that we haven't seen, obviously.
No. Yeah.
Well, because any of the bonding moments they had together, Nynaeve wasn't privy to those.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. So, like, she didn't witness them being, even if they had been romantic, she wouldn't have been there for it. But at least Rand could jump to that conclusion, because he is, like, a jealous little wine sometimes. So it would make sense that he's like, you guys were off together, and I'm sure you were hooking up. This is what this is. You're obviously in love. That would have made a lot of sense. But to have Nynaeve be like, you're in love!
They mention that, like, the day that Perrin asked Layla to marry him was the day that Rand and Egwene got together.
Yeah, that they were.
So, like, they referenced that, but it felt really
weird,
shallow. It felt really like unnecessary. But that whole scene just felt unnecessary.
Yeah, the whole scene did feel unnecessary. And but I say if it came from just Rand making an assumption,
I would have been okay with it.
Yeah, it would have worked better.
But Nynaeve just was like, first of all, fuck off. Like, who are you to even
come
and get involved in our love triangle? If there's the love triangle, it's because Rand loves
Perrin
and Egwene.
Well,
because Perrin loves Rand.
You're fighting about whether you go off to fight the Dark One. I feel like saying stop fighting over her like she's a prize is a real childish sort of thing to put in there. Mm-hmm. And coming from, you know, the village wisdom, who is older than them, even though they've been aged up on the TV show, that's a really, it's a line that doesn't fit coming from 90.
Yeah.
You know?
It was unnecessary. I feel like
super petty.
Yeah. Creating something that's not there. Like, did Amazon or Rafe feel like they needed to create a love triangle there because that's what's popular? Because it's so overdone. And like, as a woman, I don't want men fighting over me. Like, I don't want to have a relationship with one man and give another man the impression that something's going on. Like, if we're going to be in a poly relationship, cool. Like, let's all make it happen. I'm fine with that. But like, it just felt unnecessary.
Yeah.
I feel like they should do a love triangle, but it should be the other way around. Like, I feel like it would make more sense, especially when he says that he loves him too. Mm-hmm. I fully feel like it should be Egwene loves Rand and so does Perrin. I think that dynamic makes more sense of, like, if you're going to have two people being in love with the same person, I think it would make sense that the two of them are in love with Rand.
Yeah.
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 Well, we'll have to see what happens.
Not that. We know that's not going
to
happen.
No, I know. But I mean, like, hopefully they find a way to deliver something in season two that makes all of that situation fit better.
Or they just don't touch it again.
Or they just don't touch it ever again.
Yeah. I would just rather they left it alone. Like, it just feels unnecessary and trite.
Yeah.
I'll resolve it in my fan fiction.
Okay.
And my Perrin fan fiction.
Perrin fan fiction.
It'll be like resolved. That's fine.
All right, cool. There we go. We have the resolution, folks. All right. Next after that is this. Oh, God, I'm terrible now.
So then this is where Lan goes to see people from. He doesn't sneak off. He goes to find people, and Nynaeve follows him.
Yes. So, yeah, he has a moment with Moraine. And he's like, don't worry, they'll make the right decision. They'll go, all that sort of stuff. And she's like, don't you have people in the city to say goodbye to? And this, Katie, you'll like this because this is from New Spring. So the people he goes to see, that's Bukama from the first book.
Aww.
From New Spring. Yeah. So that's the family. That's, you know, he's not given a name. He's not, you know, I don't know if it's in the credit. I don't think it's in the credits or anything like that. But that's Bukama from New Spring.
That.
You've not read New Spring, have you? No. Kayla has not read New Spring.
I mean, between us,
you told me not to read it, and then I read all the books, and
not until like book seven,
and then you never said anything again.
Well, you know, go read it at some point.
It's short.
Anyway,
it's one of the later ones.
It's a widow.
Katie already told me what happened in it.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, that's Bukama. So he doesn't die, which is nice. He gets to live, you know, a much longer life.
I like that.
But yeah, the whole stalking him thing. It was
weird.
Lan appearing out in the street.
He's also
that was
weird.
Yeah,
also weird.
Like, he's meant to have the ability to like appear and, what you know, just sort of move so fast you don't know he's crossed a room type thing.
But
that's
was
meant to be
fast.
Demonstrated when, you know, Matt's being cured of the dagger, or like, you know, that's a dagger moment with Matt and Moraine where Lan seems to like just teleport across the room. Not, you've stalked me to someone's house. I'm sitting down with them at the table and now I'm going to appear out in the street.
Right.
Yeah,
and then
very
as
vampiric.
Soon as I turn around, you're there.
Yeah.
That was too much. Like that, I get that you're trying to be like, he's, you know, Costco
stealthy
Aragorn.
And
he's like sneaky and fast.
Costco Aragorn. Here you go.
I'm sorry. Say that again.
He's like a store brand, Aragorn, like Kroger brand, Costco.
Costco brand, Costco Aragorn. Uh-huh.
So like, I fully understand that he is Costco Aragorn and you're like fast and sneaky and really cool. But like to have you looking at him and then turn around and have him be there is too fast.
It's vampire. That's a vampire thing.
because I could see it if she turned around and like walked two or three steps and then he was behind her and was what are you doing?
Walked around the corner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be less weird. Turn the corner
and there he is, yeah.
That, but it was very vampire-y. It was very like supernatural. It wasn't like a normal man would do that. It was very like, I literally teleported. I have turned into a bat and appeared in front of you. No.
It was too much.
You don't like your Lanyol when he moves that quick?
Not when they make Lanyol look stupid. No. That was upsetting.
The whole scene with the family is very cute, though.
It is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it gives us a little bit more, you know, it gives him a little bit more character.
Yeah.
You know, he has more oomph in the show anyways.
Yeah, he doesn't get a lot of fleshing out initially in the books.
No.
And I like what they've done in the show to him, to give him a less stoic
mm-hmm.
and more human
mm-hmm.
Character.
Yeah. And again, it gives their relationship more depth.
Yes.
It's not just this in the books where poof, they're suddenly in a relationship out of nowhere. Like, we are continuing to build those layers and we're continuing to see those interactions. So as much as I don't like them together, I like them together and better in the show mm-hmm. because they're at least showing the progression of the progression of the relationship to some extent.
Yeah. I mean, in the books, you know, he starts, you know, their relationship starts because she can track him. In the TV show, he gets turned on because she tries to stab him. So, you know, it's a more active dynamic between the two.
Well, and they actually have, like, conversations.
Yes.
Because I feel like that's important for a modern-day woman.
That's even said when they're going through the ways. He's like, I owe Moraine 3 silvers. I might have watched that just up to that moment on the bus on the way home today, just to refresh him. He's like, I owe Moraine 3 silvers because you were scowling and I bet I'm pouting. Like, they even have little cute moments. See, that's where, cute. You know, yeah,
that's like a cute banter. It.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Her following him is weird. That's not cute. That's like, that's not even like good relationship development. That's weird. Like,
I'm going to stalk you.
Everything about it was weird. Her doing it was weird. Him like appearing behind her, like surprise, is weird. But at that point, he should have been like, don't follow me. Like, I get that he's going to invite her in because that's sweet and cute, whatever. But I'm like, let's not do this. Stop following me. You're weird. You're being weird. He's into some weird shit. Obviously, because she's like, she tried to stab me and then she follows me around like a really creepy little person, like a la Gollum. She is my Gollum, and that is what is attractive to me.
She's like my own personal assassin, and that turns me on.
Right, like I love it when people follow me around and try to kill me.
But not even a good assassin.
Yeah, like I know she's there.
She's a bumbling one.
It's not the killing that he liked, it's that she's trying.
Yes,
he's like, I love my attempted assassination continuously. It keeps me on my toes. Like, is somebody going to pop out and kill me? Will she get lucky and kill me one day? Who knows?
No, but she does get lucky.
Well,
she does.
But she's not the one doing the stabbing.
No, oh my God. Roberto, the F. Oh, oof. Boy.
Come on. You don't watch Refill Talk. Yeah, we talk about stabs all the time.
I didn't realize that you use them in that context.
Occasionally, the stabbing.
That's because you record that shit at 2 a.m. and I'm upstairs in bed and I can hear you cackling down here like a witch.
That's now you know.
Your Aiel tribe of women.
Yeah, Mel Uendo is usually performing some form of inappropriateness. It's hilarious. So...
I love that they have a bedroom scene just because I love to think about Lanyol Henny in the bedroom.
Yes, and you get to see him.
I'm here for that.
Unclothed.
Yeah, take that shirt off. I feel kind of bad objectifying him in this way, but also like I don't feel bad because I gain a lot of personal pleasure from it. That sounded gross. Ew, I don't mean it that way.
I think it's refreshing that a man is being objectified in a like particularly a high level fantasy TV show.
Yeah.
Like Game of Thrones was all about the naked women.
There were a lot of tits. In
that
show.
Exactly. And I was just like, we were watching The Witcher season 2 so far. We're not all the way through, but season 1, there were a few scenes in there. I'm like, she's naked. Just for so you no have reason. A naked fucking chick on TV.
Yeah.
Like that does not bring anything to the scene or the plot. And it's terrible. You know, just because she's attractive doesn't mean you should be doing it. I feel like, you know, it makes a refreshing change to be like, have the opportunity to have a man naked on the screen, even if it's not full frontal, despite the fact it was for Rosamund Pike.
Yeah. And I wouldn't want it to be either. I think that's a, and I'm making a generalization, a difference between men and women is like, I like the, like a slight look at your butt and then like your shirt coming off. I'd rather have your pants on because it gives me like things to think about. I don't want the full thing.
The art of suggestion.
Yeah, yes. I'm definitely for that. And I also feel like if Daniel Henney didn't want to do those things, he wouldn't.
Yeah.
If he was like, you know, I don't really feel like it adds value if I whip my shirt off, then they'd be like, cool, let's figure out something else.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel like we're trying to over-sexualize the show.
No.
They're doing it in...
No, like, yeah, when he was doing the bathtub scene with Moraine early on, it was to demonstrate the comfort the two of them had as traveling companions and the amount they've shared over the years, as you would in the situation they've been through, the 20 years they've spent together.
Yeah.
You know, there was a level of comfort and just, you know, I've seen you naked, you've seen me naked. Like, you know, we don't have things to hide. We're very comfortable with each other type thing.
Yeah.
You know, in a very platonic, non-sexual way.
You're going to climb up the steps with a full view of your wing wing and I'm okay with it.
Exactly. you know, and this moment he's just like, well, you know, this is my bedroom. I'm going to walk around topless if I want to.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it felt appropriate to the moment, you know, and also he's a very attractive man.
He is.
You know, with new scars. He didn't have scars at the beginning. Now he's got scars on his back. So.
You pay far more attention to him than I am.
That's what's important.
I can't see the forest through the trees with him sometimes, I think. Katie, are you aware that our grandmother does not find him attractive?
She's not a bright lady.
Sorry, Grandma, if you're listening. She's not listening.
To be fair, my mom is the same way.
I was going
to
be honest.
She don't know how to operate a podcast.
Your grandmother, Benny, knows how to text.
She does indeed know how to text. Yeah, not well.
I mean, we say that now, but watch. As soon as this gets, you're going to post this. And one of us is going to get like a nasty gram text with like a bunch of space underneath it. It's like, I heard what you said about me. Why would you tell everyone that I don't think he's hot? They're going to laugh at me.
Yeah, but your grandmother knows who he is. You know, because he was in a Hawaii Five-0 or something.
Yeah. And it's stupid because she liked him in that show. And now suddenly she's like, oh, I don't think he's that attractive. I'm like, you lie. Did you say your mom also is the same way?
Yeah, she doesn't think he is either.
Well, then she doesn't get to watch the show. If you don't find Daniel Henney attractive, then you don't get to watch it.
This is where we draw the line, folks. You know, I mean, to be fair, she... don't find Daniel Henney attractive, yeah.
She does not like the show. So, I mean, that's not a concern.
All right. Now, Katie, before I, you know, potentially kick you off this recording, do you think he's attractive?
Of course I do.
Okay, you can stay.
Do you think I would have even suggested that she could be on this wonderful podcast with you and us?
I just wanted to clear it for the folks who didn't have any of the pre-recording.
Oh, okay.
There we go.
You just wanted to make sure that like everybody knows I'm qualified.
I would have buried her in her own backyard in Tennessee.
I wanted it on record.
Oh, okay. You
know, he's that, like, that, she know. Is qualified to be on this podcast.
Exactly.
That is the qualification.
Yes.
And must she find Daniel Henney attractive.
Mm-hmm. Yes. There we go.
I mean,
go.
Sold. See?
So, but their scene together was, I think it was tastefully done, you know?
I guess.
You guess?
I don't, it you kinda, see like, the expression tastefully done just makes me feel uncomfortable. Like, tasteful sex scenes, that just that expression is just awkward for me.
Okay, no,
but
that's fair.
I understand what you're saying. Yes, it was not overly sexual, but like the implication was there. Much like with when I read, don't necessarily need all, I can fill in the blanks on my own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it faded to black, much how like the book does. You know, any sex scene in the book, it generally fades to black after a certain point. And the TV show did that too.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it fit.
So I was good with that. Mm. I think it's just like when, and for people that I haven't read the books and like, you know, later on they talk about like, the bond between the warder and the Aes Sedai, it would just be real awkward if, like, you were out there living your best life and that bond wasn't masked.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be real awkward.
Yeah, that would be awkward.
Be, like, sitting there, like, knitting a scarf or something, and all of a sudden, like, you're knitting out of control because, like something's happening, and you're like, oh, wait, it's Lan.
You'd be like, oof. Oof, where's that hot flush coming from?
Clearly, the wisdom has... made her way into his bedroom.
I do
maybe
like
that was the
that.
Moment. Maybe that was the moment Moraine masked the bond.
She's like,
maybe she knew that was happening, so she masked the bond, and then she never unmasked it, because we're skipping ahead to the end of the episode here. Then she gets the Rand being like, it's me, I'm the dragon. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, I'll just take that on face value, you know, and you decide you're the dragon, you know, that's fine. Despite the fact your evidence to it is, all right, no, he does just channel, but he doesn't tell Moraine he's been channeling. You know, he just says, it's me. And she's like, sweet, let's book.
Probably it's because she had a very upsetting evening. Because she's probably just like sitting it by her fire, reading a book, drinking some tea, and she's like, gross. And the vibe, like her bond, she's like, ugh. Nynaeve?
Really?
Exactly. She's like, ugh.
Kitty and I have hive mind. You're welcome.
So the Rand walks up and is like, it's me.
We coil at the same time too, like, ugh.
So, I mean, Rand coming up and knocking on the door and be like, hey, it's me. She's probably like, thank God. Let's leave. I need something else to do because this is gross.
You're the dragon? Let's do this.
You cannot even believe what's happening right now. It's nasty.
So she really lucked out that he actually is the dragon then, you know. Mm-hmm. And imagine if she got there and was just like, wait, you said you were the dragon. Well, I don't know. I thought I was. And you're like,
again, back to the books. And like we knew it was going to be different. We know it's Rand.
Yes.
The whole prophecy is centered around someone that we know is Aiel. Who else is Aiel?
Even in the show, like, I feel at that point she has narrowed it down to it is Rand or it is Matt. And Matt is not available at this time. So, like, you know, Rand...
Like Matt is there with, like, the voicemail, like, you have reached the real-life decoy of Matt Coughlin.
Right.
Press one to get me back out of the ways. I don't know.
Right. Like, I feel like she's just like, all right, let's, you know, this is gross.
I'm going to settle for the ginger.
I'm having a bad night. Like, this is gross. You think you're convinced. I'll take you there. And if you're not, you'll die. And that's fine. At that point, I'll know it's not you and I'll go find Matt.
Yeah.
But also, I was going to take you tomorrow and you weren't going to be it tomorrow and you were going to die anyway. So really, I'm just saving all of us time.
Right, like, now I don't have to fight with all these women, right, that are, like, screaming at each other about whatever they're screaming at, like, sacrificing themselves. I don't have to fight with that. I don't have to listen to this Nynaeve shenanigans happening right now. I'm gonna shut that off. Let's go, buddy. Pack a bag. If you die, you die. Are you ready to die? Cool. All right. Agreed. Let's go.
I did like that they did, like, that aha moment for him where he's like, I am the dragon, and then thought about all of these things mm-hmm. that feel really obvious once he goes through them.
Yes.
And then we flash back to the ways when we think that we see Egwene with her powerful swipe, and in fact is Rand.
Yeah.
And then your Egwene balloon goes...
Yeah, let's steal Egwene's thunder in that moment.
Right?
Yeah.
My balloon has inflated. Poor Egwene.
Yeah.
I fully had to watch that episode again because I blacked out the whole episode. As soon as I saw him do the magic and know that Egwene, the one time she was useful, was not even her, I blacked out the entire rest of the episode and could not tell you a single thing that happened. Because I was genuinely like that ticked off that I was just like, it just wiped it from my mind. I was like, oh, great. Egwene is about as much of a turd as I always thought. Like the two times that she has done anything of any kind of helpfulness. And questionable helpfulness with Perrin and the White Cloaks. Questionably helpful at that point. And then the one time I was like, good job, Egwene. You did a thing. It's like Rand did the thing. And I'm like, oh, good. Well, the ginger did that instead. I'm so glad you're here with us, Egwene. Right. Like, so glad you're here for moral support. What would we do without you?
No, she's there so that Rand could abandon someone in bed in the middle of the night and go shoot arrows.
That's true. You know? That was her purpose. Yeah. I'm glad that we have a whole character to create a love triangle between Perrin and Rand. Like, who does Rand love? Does he love Perrin? Does he love Egwene? No one. Rand loves himself. Let's go.
Someone has
fight
to love
somebody.
Rand.
Stu loves Rand.
Stu loves Rand.
He's like, I don't need either of you. I got me and my hair. And Moraine, who is only tolerating me because she's otherwise annoyed.
Yeah. Yeah, like Rand turns up the door. He's like, yeah, Moraine, you, me. No, You, Stu, and me, we're going to the lights.
And she's like, bet, let's go.
Yep.
I don't want to stay here anymore. This is, whatever's happening here is nasty and weird, and you're all very young. And I don't want any part of this. I did forget about
the dramatic him leaving her bed and then going to shoot arrows scene.
Yes.
That in retrospect, feels completely unnecessary.
Yeah, well, prior to that, he had been shooting arrows and missing the bullseye.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go off and, you know, they start schmooching and they, you know, we come back and they...
He shot a bullseye then too?
Yeah, there we go. He goes, shoots a few bullseye. He goes, shoots a bullseye. And then he gets up and shoots a few more bullseyes and has a realization moment. It was like, well, now I've got a clear head. I can actually be like, yeah, I'm the dragon. So...
It was me all along. Now I can finally shoot my arrows good.
Yeah.
Because I believe in myself.
Yeah.
It is surprising that they went off on their own, though. Like, I was a little surprised by that.
Well, they've amped up a lot of the, you know, if you're not the dragon, you'll die.
Yeah.
So, which is not in the books.
Yeah.
You know.
And then that's, like, and then the next morning they discover they're gone, and that's kind of the end of that
episode, yeah, because, right? Yeah, the episode, yeah, plays off like the knocking on the door. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's like the door opening. Yeah, it's like Lan is at one door, and then
that was the door. You're welcome.
Yeah, okay, cool. Rand was at the other door. And yeah, that is where the episode ends.
Okay.
Thanks so much for listening to episode 7 review, folks. We sat here for well over 3 hours doing both episodes, so I actually split it in half. And the following episode will drop on Friday. So I hope you come back and check out that episode's review, because the hilarity just continued. Please let us know what you thought about our review, any thoughts you had, things you wanted to add. You can email me, malkeertalks@gmail.com. You can hit me up on Twitter @malkeertalks, but you'll all find the dad jokes, tam jokes, and so on and so forth. Follow us on YouTube and, you know, all those fun things, like, subscribe, all that sort of stuff. And hope to check you out at episodes 8, folks. Until then, may you always find water and shade.